What's up, everybody? It's your main man, Spice Adams, and I am here in New York City filming Off the Grid Podcast. This time, we got Grammy Award-winning DJ and producer, DJ Premier. We're going to talk about DJing, we're going to talk about hip-hop, and we're going to talk about everything music. Let's go. Yes, sir. I'm here with my guy, Grammy Award DJ and producer, DJ Premier.
Yes, sir.
What's up, baby?
Good. I'm bumping the mic already. So if you hear a thud, that's it. You saw it on camera.
What's going on, man?
Oh, man. Slow motion, just staying focused on doing music all the time. Obviously, that's the biggest passion and my calling. So that's where I always focus on that and raising a 12-year-old at 57 years old.
Woo-wee! Man, I got 15, 13, 12, and 10. And it is a beast.
Oh yeah. Well, I've got to come to your house to actually.
Yeah, you seen the crib.
Yeah, I was like, oh, that's what he does. That's what he films at. Oh, that's the staircase. You know. So it was always dope just to experience how you transitioned from doing, you know, sports and you know, for two classic teams, you know, from the Bears to the 49ers, and then now, like, you were just so hilarious that I'm always like, what is he gonna think of next? You keep coming up with funny stuff, man. And then you and Crockett got together.
Oh yeah, man.
Was that after the Babyface Teddy Riley?
Yeah, that's like one of the first things we did, man. He was Babyface. I was Teddy Riley.
Avion Crockett's dope, funny, man. Shout to him too.
Yeah, hey. That's my guy, man. That's my big brother, man.
What up, Crockett?
So how did you get the name DJ Premier? Like, I'm pretty sure you want Premier your whole career.
My first name was, well, first I was DJ Chris.
DJ Chris.
Yeah, because my name is Christopher.
You went with the generic joint, me, DJ Anthony.
DJ, yeah, exactly. DJ Steve. So, you know. But, after there was Jam Master Jay and Grandmaster Flash, and God bless Jam Master Jay, rest in peace, I said, no one's using wax, like the vinyl, we call it wax. Mm-hmm. So I said, how about Wax Master C?
Yeah.
That became my new name, and shout to my first MC named Top Ski, who went to college with me at Prairie View. Shout to PV, HBCU. And this wasn't done on purpose. I just happened to get a clean hoodie out of the dryer. So, But Top used to just be like, yeah, yo, wax. That's how he's always talking, yo, wax. And to where now, even to this day, even though I'm DJ Premier, whenever I talk to him, because we're still friends, he'll be like, hey, yo, wax. You know, so, but he always, and he's from Boston, like Guru is, recipes to him as well. He always still calls me wax. So, but when I got my demo heard at Wild Pitch Records, where Gangstar was already a group, the owner of the label, Stu Fine, was like, I really don't like your name. He said, I think you could get a better one. And I'm like,
He was hating on your name.
Yeah, though. He said, I don't like Wax Master C. And I'm like, because there was a Wax Master Tory who actually happened to be on B-Boy Records, which was KRS label when Criminal Minded came out. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, there is another Wax Master, because at the time I didn't know. Boom. He says, if you could come up with a better name, he said, let's see if we could push for that. I was about to go back to college after the Thanksgiving break. I told my mom about it, God bless her. She said, make a list of like 5 to 10 names. I got a sheet of paper. My mother's an art teacher, so she always has something to write on or something to draw on. Mm-hmm. Started writing names down. I remember I had a DJ Scratch and Cut, you know. I'm glad I didn't go with that one. Premier was one of them. What was another one? Platter, DJ Platter, because, you know, the platter spins on the record on the turntable. So I just wanted things that connected to DJs, knowing the terminology. As long as the DJ knew the slang, I wasn't worried about everybody else, because DJs know what a platter is. We know what the platter dots are. You know, we know what scratching and cutting is. It's not the same, you know. So Premier was one of the names. My mom looked at the list and was like, I like premiere. She said, but take the E off the end. She said, because it's not like a world premiere with an E on the end. It's like you're number one. And I was like, okay. I called Stu Fine and said, how about DJ Premiere? He said, that's it.
That's the one.
And I stuck with it.
Nice. All right.
So the Wax Master, but I'm still Wax.
I'm still Wax.
What up top?
So,
and I got to shout out the other two members of my crew back then. Mm-hmm. Sugar Pop from Dallas, Texas, and Styli T. He was our flavor.
Styli T. So this is a group you had in Texas.
Yeah, we were called MCs in Control, which I thought was a
so
dope
you used
name.
To rhyme?
No, I was the DJ.
Okay, okay. Yeah, but, I was about to say.
Yeah, no, I'm just good at reciting rhymes of other people. You know, I know you probably got some bars stacked.
Oh
right now.
Man, I always try to do some of everything, man. I don't get embarrassed too much. So if I spit something, I don't even really care about the reaction.
That's what's up.
So you are originally from Texas.
Yes.
A lot of people think you from New York.
Born and raised, yeah. My grandfather lived in Brooklyn, and that's how my first New York connection started, because every summer, mm-hmm. when we got out of school for the summer, every year since I was probably like 7 years old, we have to go to South Carolina to visit my father's family. Mm-hmm. Then we drive to Raleigh, and we're just driving. Mm-hmm. We drive to Raleigh, North Carolina, to see my aunt and my uncle and my cousin. Then we drive to Baltimore, where my mom was born and raised. And then we drive to New York as the finale, and we stay with my grandfather. Well, we'll stay at a hotel, but my grandfather and I'm the only boy, so I have all sisters. So,
how many sisters you have?
Two
sisters.
Yeah, okay. Shout out to Ani and Deb. So with that. Man, we all into sports, all three of us. My sister plays sports. Both sisters play sports, volleyball, basketball. You know, the only thing I sucked in was basketball. You know, I can make the hoop, but I had no game. I was always into hitting, so football was my thing. Yeah, before my mom passed, she framed my football pictures too and sent them to me. So I gotta hang them up because I just moved, and I gotta put those on the wall because she was getting sick at the time. So for her to take the time out to, I didn't even know where the pictures were. She was like, yo, look what I did, and frame my pictures. So
yeah, condolences, man. I remember you posting that on Instagram.
Yeah,
about
she
your
died
mom
during
passing
COVID.
Away.
Thank goodness it wasn't from COVID either, you know. So, and my dad, 2018, she was in 2020, but the dates were 3 days apart. He died June 8th, she died June 11th. You know, so, but the good thing is they lived, you know, she made it to 91, he made it to 89, and I was on the Prime Tour with Royce, the Prime 2 tour. My dad was not doing well. We're doing a meet and greet for the second show of the tour, and my dad called my sister and said he wanted to talk to me. Mm-hmm. And already we knew he was in the hospital, but I'm like, oh boy.
Yeah.
He gets on the phone, and this is how old school he is and how real he kept it. He said, son, I need you to call the Undertaker. They don't say funeral director.
Yeah.
He said, I need you to call the Undertaker and make my funeral arrangements because I feel like it's about that time to go. And I'm like, you sure? He's like, yeah. And he was exactly right. I flew home the next day, put the tour on hold. Went down to handle my business, got him. He said, I want to die in my house because he built this house from scratch on empty land in Prairie View. Mm-hmm. And that's the house we still take care of to this day. He went in there, we brought him home, and he was gone in 2 days.
Wow.
But, and you know, so ill, after all the crying and all that during the process to get to the end, the day he died, we were watching the Cavs play the Golden State Warriors game seven. And that's when the Warriors won that one. This may have been this. It was the one after the Cavs. The Cavs won that year before. Mm-hmm. So I walk in and see that they're getting stomped. Go in the room, check on him. He had just passed. And then when me and my sister and my nephew went in there, check on him. Instead of crying, we high fived like, yo, we did it, because that was the way he wanted to go out. So you know, shit, you couldn't have written a better story.
Yeah, you man. Know. Condolences, man.
Yeah, but we're all good. I mean, we carry the good energy that he left. He was hardcore with everything as far as do the right thing, don't be late, and I'm the worst at being on time. I've gotten better, you know. We were supposed to start at 4. I got here 4:07, so that's not bad.
So how did Texas kind of mold you into the producer that you are now, or the DJ that you are, or how did music that you used to listen to when you were coming up, how did that shape you into
A lot of it is because of the fact that we didn't have any rap music as a kid. You know, being I'm born in 66, our upbringing is all soul music and funk. And, you know, like, you know, even the early Parliament records weren't like they were when Mothership Connection came out. They were doing doo-wop stuff and, you know, stuff like that. They were called the Parliaments.
Shout out to Amp, too, man. Rest in peace, Amp.
Yeah, rest in peace to Amp, man. Parliament. It's crazy that you had the JD shirt on. And, you know, I remember Q-Tip met JD through Amp, you know, said, shout to Dilla. We've had sessions together. We've hung out together. Good dude. And then more Detroit connection, you know, so, yeah, Amp, love, brother.
Rest in peace.
Yeah, so really with my mother being an art teacher, right out of our hallway in our house, she would sit right by her stereo and paint every day. And like I said, she taught everybody in our neighborhood. Everybody that knows me and my mom and my dad and my sisters know my mother for art. And almost everybody in our town has an original painting of something she did in their home. You know, so she's known like that. And so with her playing so many records and stuff, she was just up on everything from Minnie Riperton to Grover Washington to Isaac Hayes to Al Green to Aretha. You know, Luther was brand new when I was coming up. He was more of a background singer and became famous. But in my childhood, there was no Prince yet. There was no Luther, you know, that era. Luther, Prince and all that is more my era of growing from a child to a teenager to adulthood because of my sisters.
So what did you used to sneak and listen to? I think.
Oh, no. Only thing I sneakily
Red Fox
to is the Richard Pryor album. But she used to hide them under her bed. And my sister and them would be like, hey, look. They would be like, yo, look what's under the bed and under the mattress. And it'd be 8-track tapes of Richard Pryor, LaWanda Page, who y'all know is on Esther, on Sanford and Son. What else she had under there? Red Fox. She had Dick Gregory album.
Yeah,
Dick Gregory. What's his name? The one that did Here Come the Judge. They consider that one of the first rap records.
I'm drawing a blank myself.
I'm looking at his face right now.
Flip Wilson?
No, not Flip Wilson. We used to watch the Flip Wilson show. He had Here Come the Judge. What was his name?
I don't know. I'm drawing a blank.
Yeah, we should Moms Mabley. We should watch her.
Dolemite.
Definitely Rudy Ray Moore. All that stuff. So when they would go to parties and stuff, we would listen to all that stuff. And, you know, back in that day, it's like, ooh.
Yeah, yeah.
It's you know, that was like a big deal. During that time, there was so much music in the house. You're pretty much up on everything. Mm-hmm. You know, Maze was starting to be a new thing that we were growing up into.
Frankie Beverly.
But prior to that, it was just she had just tons of jazz, tons of soul. She had James Brown, of course, and then my mom used to go to concerts.
Yeah,
heavy. So we used to go to concerts all the time. See the Jackson 5. We'd see Ike and Tina Turner. I got lost at Ike and Tina Turner's concert because me being the little mischievous kid, I'm dancing in the aisle, trying to do my little steps, watching Tina Turner wiggle. And then I ended up going too far from the aisle, and I end up in the wrong aisle, and I'm looking around, can't find my parents and my sisters.
Oh, no.
I start crying. The usher says, you know, you don't know where you were. I'm like, no, I can't find my family. They take me to the front of the stage to make an announcement that there's a kid lost. And Tina Turner makes the announcement and says, there's a kid up here who's lost. And it's me. And my parents had to come get me. But hey, I got to be right next to Tina.
Wow.
Ike was still there then. So.
I wish you two was out back then. day when Preem got lost.
Yeah, so Ike and Tina Turner and the Ikeettes are very, and the whole review is very special to me. So rest in peace to Tina and Ike. They both gone, but left a stain on my brain for sure.
Yeah. So how did you end up going back to, because you went to Brooklyn and then you went back to Prairie View to go to school.
Yeah, well, like I said, staying with my grandfather all the time. He was into to baseball, so he would take me to baseball games, you know, because I was into Houston everything, Astros, Rockets, you know, you name it. I was just Houston, Houston, Houston. So when I started staying with him, and I was into pinball machines. They were really popular in the 70s and 80s. And he would always take me to Playland, which was on 42nd Street. So we would catch a Yankee game, and mainly a daytime game. Go after the Yankee game, he would take me to Playland and give me a whole stack of quarters, and I would just play pinball, and I would battle people, you know, because I was really quick with my, I guess that's part of the scratching and all that. I was quick with my hands, and I used to battle people like, hey, I'll play you in pinball, stay there all day. And then as I got older, closer to maybe like 13, he took me to Playland, and now I'm seeing the B-boys out there with the boom box, and they breaking and doing all this and got the dope track suits, and I'm just like, what is this? And, you know, that's a new thing, especially in for me, like from 79, 80, even 78, this is a new thing to see that I'm telling people in Texas, like, yo, you know, you come back from summer and you talk about what you did for the summer. I'm telling them, man, I saw a dude take two records of the same copy and make them play nonstop on beat. And they're like, no, you didn't. And I'm like, yes, I did. It was still like a UFO sighting. It's like, yo, I saw this. It's like, nah, no,
you remember who the DJ was?
No, not back then. Nah, it's just a guy with turntables, you know, on the street, you know, in Times Square. So you're just in awe of these guys. You know, these just regular native New Yorkers that's doing what they're doing. But to tell it to your friends in Texas, you know, we don't have TV to even capture all, you know, video to capture it. So now I'm like, when I get older, I'm going to move to New York. But I'm just kind of pre-planning way off. But as hip-hop started to build, the only thing we had during my era at the time was Rap-A-Lot, you know, and they had the Ghetto Boys. This is before Scarface. This is before Willie D. And as they started to grow, the only other records that we knew besides anything under the Rap-A-Lot roster was one of our top DJs in Houston. His name is Captain Jack. He had a record called Don't Do It Like That Baby, because whenever he would promote parties and stuff at the club on the radio, he'd go, Don't Do It Like That Baby. And, you know, and then he put the record out. So being that he was popular from just even doing a commercial to advertise the club nights, now the record was rocking also in the club too, you know. So I still have it, have two copies of the vinyl. So
you had to be the man at Prairie View then. Like, if you brought that back there.
Well, at that time, I started DJing parties. I couldn't scratch yet. That's later when I went back in 84, because I graduated high school. I went back in 84. I just knew how to blend really fast. I could take two records, just really push them together and make the next one blend in. I didn't know how to cut and scratch until I met a guy named R.P. Cola. His name is Randy Pettis. He was cutting up 5 minutes of funk from Houdini. And I was just like stuck. He was from Corpus Christi, Texas. He was a student at Prairie View, and he also DJed at Magic 102, which was our Hot 97 back in the 80s. And so he would actually let me go with him to, and then he DJed at a club which was our tunnel. It was called the Rhinestone Wrangler. And there was a dope record store right across the street from Astroworld, the amusement park and the Astrodome, called Sound Waves. I got a job there, and that's when my hip-hop career started to evolve, because I got to big up Carlos Garza, who helped me get the job, because I knew so much about music.
Prem is a historian. I don't know if y'all knew this or not, but I'm fascinated, man. Keep going. I'm sorry.
Yeah, shout out to Carlos. Carlos got me the job, and at Sound Waves, it was a plethora of so many different people that came in the store. Pimps would come in there. like they were coming dipped out with the suit, the Stacey Adams, all the
oh, so like one of my characters.
Oh, yeah. and like in Texas, Lattimore is a really popular artist. And they'd come in there and go, yo, you got some Lattimore? Not Lattimore. Lattimore. And I'd be like, yeah, which one you want? He'd go, yo, let me get the new cassette. And you give him the new cassette, and he got the girls all draped over him. You know, he's like, yeah, baby, you gotta go and grab me just a couple more tapes and stuff. drug dealers.
Just like Ice-T on Power.
Yeah.
Like that. Just rolling up. Okay.
Yep. So, gotcha. I mean, just every facet of people from the hood. came to sound waves, and you had to know your music. You had to know Zydeco music. You had to know rock. You had to know jazz. You had to know soul, funk, everything. And since we knew so much music, and I was starting to get mixtapes from New York, from taping the radio with BLS, with Marley Marl and Magic, I would go. I would even just go for the summer and then come right back with a whole bunch of tapes of Red Alert, Chuck Chill Out, The Awesome Two. And find those records and then tell them that's what we need to order.
Yeah.
And we would, Southwest Wholesale was our distributor, and I'd call them and say, hey, we need to get a couple of these. And we would always sell everything. I remember when Milli Vanilli came out, we were like, give us 300 copies on 12 inch. And they were like, you sure? We're like, yeah, it's about to be a hit.
Yeah.
Next thing you know, everybody's like, there's a song called Girl You Know It's True. Yeah, right there, top shelf, you know, or people will hum a song to you and we knew what it was. You know, that's how much we had to know music.
Yeah.
Once Billboard started to do a rap chart and Billboard, Carlos became the rap reporter for Houston. So they were like, yo, Stu Fine from Wild Pitch could say, hey man, anything new happening out there? And he said, man, this is DJ that works here that's coming to New York trying to shop his demo tape.
Yeah.
And he's dope. You should check him out. And he's like, well, have him send it to me.
Yeah,
I told him don't send it because I'm not ready yet. It needs to be better. He still snuck a copy to him in New York and sent it to him. Guru, God bless him, of course, heard the demo tape, heard my demo tape, and he heard Lord Finesse's demo tape.
He heard that while he was in Boston?
No, he was going back and forth. He was living in Brooklyn now, but he was kind of going back and forth, mainly staying in Brooklyn at the time. His aunt lived in Brooklyn. Let him rent a little piece of the apartment if he, you know, paid his bills. So,
yeah.
but he had other members of the group, and they stayed in Boston and didn't really carry the whole journey where he's like, look, if y'all not gonna come stay with me in New York, I'm taking the Gangstar name and going on with it.
Because, oh, so he had already established.
Yeah, Gangstar was already out. Oh, yeah, because okay. Gangstar was really started by Big Shug.
Yeah.
Shug's brother, Suave D, was the DJ then, and Guru, it was the three of them, Shug and Guru came up with
overtake.
Yeah.
Overtook the DJs.
Yep, and Guru and Shug are the ones that came up with the name of the logo, this chain and the star.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they created all of that stuff, so. Because both of them went to Morehouse for a brief period of time.
So they brought you in.
Mm-hmm, they brought me in after they heard my demo. They didn't like Top. We kept making better demos to see if we could get us signed. And then Top got frustrated with waiting so long that he decided to go into the military. And once he went to the military, I'm like, dude, I'm not waiting for you to come back. Because he enlisted for 4 years. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I'm gone.
I ain't got time.
Yeah, if he said a year, I would have waited.
Okay.
But four, nah.
Yeah.
I called them back and said, hey, man, Top just went to the military. So I'm by myself. And they're like, you're in. And that's how our journey started to move up. And Words I Manifest was our first single, which was the first video that we shot, and he looked like Malcolm X.
So you was fresh out of college?
Mm-hmm. I hadn't even graduated yet. I was in my junior year.
What?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
It was like what you said earlier.
So how'd that conversation go with your mom? Like, yeah, I'm about to...
My mom was cool about it. My pop wasn't really cool about it because he was like, your son, you have no plan. You're right, like right, packing right. up to go to New York
yeah.
and you have no plan. I think you
so what year was that?
That was 85.
85.
Yeah. Really more 86. Yeah, 86 because I was a sophomore in 85 at PV. And my junior year is when I left. So yeah, 86.
Okay. So after y'all formed the group, which that was like your first big break. Like what was your first like big break after that? Like what was the album that came out that you was like, all right, cool.
Well, my first big break as a producer, before it got to the higher levels, was really the fact that Lord Finesse sent his demo to Wild Pitch as well. Guru said, shout out check Lord him Finesse. Out. What up, Nestor? and so they said, if you like it, and co-sign Guru with that, we're going to sign him. So they signed me. I mean, they signed Lord Finesse and gave him an album deal. And he brought in DITC. So there was no DITC yet. He brought in Showbiz as a producer.
Mm-hmm.
He brought in AG as an MC. He brought in Diamond D as a producer. And that's how we started to know them in the Bronx. And then as that went further, he brought Fat Joe.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And then we met Joe. And then they Showbiz and Diamond D said, we're going to start a crew and come up with a name for our crew. And they created the name Digging in the Crates Crew, which obviously, you know, is D-I-T-C. And yeah. That's how that was born. Once that started to go, and I started to, maybe like 1992 when we were doing our Daily Operation album,
yeah.
The one that Take It Personal, and actually Dwick, because Dwick really is from the...
That is my joint,
thank you. Shout to Greg.
That is my joint. Yeah, yeah, nice and smooth.
Yeah, because you know that came out really in '92. It's on the Hard to Earn album, which came out in '94, because we wanted to put it on. It was a B side, just on the 12-inch single. Mm-hmm. We wanted to put it on the album, and they didn't add it to the album once the song blew up. So I didn't want any gangsta album being out where you can never find Dwick, being it was just an unreleased B side. Mm-hmm. So we put it on Hard to Earn. So, and obviously it's on our Full Clip Greatest Hits album too, but it was meant to be out on Daily Operation. Once we did that album and Dwig got big, Take It Personal blew up, Ice-T reached out to me to remix Lifestyles of the Rich and Infamous for his single from the original Gangsta album. And then from there, I got a call from KRS-One, which for us, you know, KRS-One wants to talk to me, and he said, I'm going to do a new album called Return of the Boom Bap. And it's so crazy that, you know, me, Showbiz, you know, Showbiz did Sound of the Police. Kid Capri produced, I think, 3 songs on there. KRS produced songs on there.
Mm-hmm.
First time I ever met Channel Live, and KRS is in there doing the record Madism, just making it right there on the spot on the SB 1200. And it was just a fun ride. And just so crazy now, because now when they categorize hip hop, you got trap, you got drill, you got bounce, and then they'll say booty music, and then they'll say you got boom bap.
Mm-hmm.
And we weren't really saying that term is just, but once that album came out, now that's considered a category. Boom bap is now a style of hip hop.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, speaking of that, like, what do you think the current state of hip hop is now?
The current state now is, it reminds me of how it used to be when we had to find the dope stuff. You mm-hmm. know what I'm saying? Like now, because I don't want to hear kiddie rap. I'm grown,
right.
You know, but a lot of the younger artists that are out now cater to the kids, and that's cool because we were the kids during their generation.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're the kids, and so I don't hate on them. A lot of them don't have the lyricism part that we're raised on, because in our era, if you couldn't rhyme and your rhymes were weak, you'd either get booed, stuff thrown at you, or beat up.
Yeah.
You would get jumped in the club like, yo, your rhymes are weak, and they would jump you. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's where we come from. So I still like the pure lyricism part of having just dope bars and having a hot pen. And that's one thing I like about Cole and Drake and Kendrick. They're way younger, but you know, they're in their late 30s now, about to hit their 40s, but they still want to really put their pen game in.
They respect the craft.
In there, exactly, where I can recite some of their stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and then with me having a 12-year-old, he likes Sexy Red, you know, right. So now I'm going, bend that ass over, let that breathe, you know, like that and Ski Yee, and, you know, like I'm up on that. Because when we go to practice, like if I'm going to baseball practice,
mm-hmm.
I'm driving, I let him play what he wants, someone will come on like, damn, who's that? And it might be Yeet.
Yeah.
And I'll look at
that. That's my son, like Yeet.
Yeah, and then I'll go and take a picture of it and then put it in my Serato. And then he's singing the lyrics, you know, and he's blah, 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 blah. Then he's playing Future. Then he's playing, you name it. Like I said, from Sexy Red all the way down to, he'll play Bound by
Coyle Ray.
Yeah, Coyle Ray. You know, which I've liked her off rip, just because she's, you know, put her pen game down from the mm-hmm. first time I ever heard her rap. But now I'm taking pictures of everything I don't know that he's up on, so that I can, you know, he loves SZA, you know, big mm-hmm. time, you know. And again, he's a 12-year-old. I'm like, what you up on SZA? you hear what she's saying in the lyrics? You know, like even when Sexy Red says, let that breathe, I say, you know what the goes, no. But he's singing every bit of the lyrics. I'm like, all right, I'll school you later. You know, 13 is around the corner, so you're a few months away. That's my take on like the state of hip hop now. I'm glad the 50 year mark finally hit.
What is your opinion on the 50 years? Like, do you think it was? I know you're not gonna hit like every single thing when it comes to 50 years. Like, for me, I thought Heavy D should have been celebrated a little bit more. Mm-hmm. I thought MC Hammer should have been celebrated a little bit more. DJs, like, what do you think?
And I saw Hammer say why he didn't. He said he's been invited to mad stuff and he turned them down. KRS. I totally dug his point. I dug both of their points of why they they turned down. It's like everybody's right, because even with the Grammys doing a special on it, at least it was curated by somebody who's authentic that we all respect. LL, you know, LL to have Rock the Bells Radio, and I can turn it on and hear PSK come on, and then I can hear, and then shoot, I can hear Turn This Mother Out from Hammer, and then after that you hear Afropuss from Rage, you know, and then you hear the Sequence Funk You Up, and then from that he plays Cold Crush live tapes in different segments. He does the sample thing.
So you'll never forget, man.
So the fact that it was curated, you know, I know Questlove and LL were a big part of putting it together. At least you had Rakim there. You had two live crew. It was good to see Luke up there. You see, you had Boosie up there. Mm-hmm. You know, you had a nice mixture of everybody. So whether you turn it down and don't do it, I understood both sides, where like you just said, no one's wrong. Mm-hmm. You know, it was just their opinion to turn down the invitation to be a part of it. And honestly, KRS is the only person I ever heard on the song I'm Still Number One say, 50 years down the line, you can start this because we'll be the old school artists. And he said, and even at that time, I'll say a rhyme, a brand new style, ruthless and wild, running around, spending money, having fun, because even then, I'm still number one.
Number one.
So I've always been like, damn, wait till it gets to 50 years. And this is probably 20 years in.
Yeah.
And I remember we did the 30-year tribute on the BET Awards. There was no BET Hip Hop Awards at the time. Mm-hmm. Shout to Jesse Collins. He got me to put it all together. MC Light was.
Are you there, like, curated it?
I was the music director for it. So I was able to get MC. We couldn't get Salt and Pepper or Latifah, so I said, get MC Light to do Paper Thin. Mm-hmm. She came. Slick Rick and Dougie came. Melly Mel came, and the Sugar Hill Gang. Public Enemy. It was just dope because, and then Mekhi Phifer transitioned each one where we go to another song, and look in the crowd and see Pharrell and Andre 3000 and Big Boy screaming and singing every song, then knowing how classic this stuff meant to all of them. It was just dope to see that, seeing Taraji screaming and doing, I'll do years if I pull this trigger. Like, everybody was singing every record. Because it's so pure, you can never deny timeless music like that. And that was in the 30-year era.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was good to be a part of that. It was good to be a part of the Jam Master Jay tribute when he passed away. Me, Kid Capri, Grandmaster Flash, and Jazzy Jeff. You know, there was never a live tribute to a DJ that passed on national television. And, you know, that came out flawless. It was just fun to be a part of all these things. Even the Cypher. The Cypher started with us.
That's dope.
Yeah,
Cypher
is
dope.
Built, you know, I don't do it anymore, but I did so many years. The first year I had a gig, and last minute I couldn't make it to the shoot, and DJ Scratch of VPMD filled in for me. And then from there, Jesse was like, yo, we're going to keep doing it. You know, we're going to get more MCs. And it just kept growing and growing. It got to the point where people calling me, you don't want to be in the Cypher this year. I'm like, yo, I ain't got nothing to do with that. It's whoever they pick. I just picked the beat. I would just pick it, but I always kept it break beats because that took it back to the lunchroom table.
Yeah.
Beating on the table at school, that type of thing. Playing spades in the morning, or crazy eights, or dominoes. Or, you know, I didn't know what pity pad was until I came to New York, but, you know.
Well, I mean, like, if you think about, like, all your hits, like, you got hits with Jay-Z, with M.O.P., with Mobb Deep, like, some of everybody. Like, how do you go from that to say, I'm doing a song with Christina Aguilera?
Right.
Like, how did that come about?
With Christina, we got a call. Actually, her ex-husband, Jordy, was a hip-hop head. He and his brother. And they... put her on to the music that I did because she was looking for a certain style, and she wanted to incorporate jazz sampling and stuff like that as well because she was taking it back to that era. And once she heard my, she said when I met her in California, she said, "I love Group Home." I'm like, "Word,
okay."
Yeah, she liked Group Home. She loved Gangstar. She liked Jay with the Damager and stuff like that. She liked the Biggie stuff I did. So we clicked. She wasn't even married yet. She was about, she was getting her wedding together. So she was going back and forth from, you know, just different things she had to pick out for the wedding, and then come back in the room and write with me, and and then go back in the room and then record, and more wedding people are showing up, and it was just nonstop. And then next thing you know, we finished the album, and then she said, "Hey, I want to invite you to my wedding." So that was my first celebrity wedding to ever go to, and talk about over the top. It was one of the most unique weddings I ever seen.
So while you were there at the reception, were you looking at the DJ like, "Hold on, what is this guy doing?"
You talking about at the wedding reception?
Yeah.
Actually, it was DJ AM. God rest him, man. Yeah.
So he
tore it. And we were in a cave, in a, because it was in Napa Valley. So we're actually in a cave, in a wine cave. AM was killing it. He was nasty on the wheels anyway. So.
Oh, okay. So he got your blessing then. Once you saw it was AM, you was like, good.
Yeah, me and AM DJed at the Playboy Mansion
In
1997, I think, or 98. It was between 97 and 98 because I remember I wore a Biggie Born Again long sleeve shirt because that they were about to drop the album. And I had just done the Limp Bizkit record with Method Man and Limp Bizkit, and Fred Durst hired me to be the DJ at the Playboy Mansion for his pajama party. Mm. So,
how many times did you leave the turntable to go out and party?
Just go to the bathroom. That was it. And but there was a lot of bunnies hopping around, and you know, we definitely were hopping after the bunnies. Yeah, it was fun. Rest in peace to my homie Headquarters. He got kicked out twice, and I had to go get security to let him back in. Then he got kicked out again, and I had to go get him back in. And, you know, so, yeah, those are fun times, man. But, yeah, AM DJed after me. Mm-hmm. And I remember Limp Bizkit had their first single before the Method Man record was called Nookie.
I remember
Hugh Hefner came over and was like, he wanted to just do a quick little announcement, and, you know, "I just want to thank everybody for coming." And Fred Durst, "I just want to say one thing. Thank God for Nookie." And I'll never get him saying that. "Thank God for Nookie," you know, and saying it with that exact type of voice. And then next thing you know, I remember I played Ghostface One, and it just came on One, and all the Playboy bunnies were rocking and everything. I got crazy pictures to show you.
That's my joint, yeah, man.
So they were dancing to that type of hip hop. Uh-huh. I didn't have to, you know, tone it down just because I said, "What style you want?"
Yeah,
he said, "Keep it raw hip hop."
Ooh,
and I didn't have Serato then. This is just vinyl.
So you was bringing in the crates.
Yeah.
Ooh,
yeah, well, you know, when
How do you like that? Like, because, you know, it's like, I don't know, it's kind of like barbecuing, right? Like, you know, you're getting the charcoal and all that, but now they got the Traeger out. You just plug it in and just go. Like, now it's different. So it's like Serato. You just double click and it plays the music.
I wish with Serato, shout to DJ, the legend, DJ, the icon, DJ Jazzy J. Jazzy J and Jazzy Jeff were two people that had to convince me to switch to Serato, because I was like, "Hell no, man, I'm doing vinyl. That's cheating." And they're like, "No, it's not." They're like, "Yo, you got to understand, doing Serato is like a gift, because you carried crates for years. You flew to Europe and your crates are getting lost on the plane.
Yeah.
And you have to wait for it to get delivered to your hotel. And, you know, you flew with six and only two came. And you're worried about, oh, my records are going to be missing for life. And then you got a gig and you don't have all your records." They're like, "This is a reward. Now you can put 10,000 records in there. You don't have to carry the big crates and the big speakers and all that stuff. You just carry your laptop.
Yeah.
And I was against it for years before I got into it. Obviously now, I always felt like if you got Serato, you should qualify for it. It's like a credit check.
Mm. You own over 1,000 records?
Nope, can't get Serato.
Yeah.
You know, like it's for people
that— You gotta pay your dues.
Yeah,
first.
Pay your dues to earn one, because it got to a point where all these famous actors and
celebrities are DJs getting, now. What do you think about that?
Getting hundreds of thousands of dollars and they suck on that party. That shit's going all boom, 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 clang, clang, boom, boom, boom.
No blending, like nothing. Just
and they're getting big money. Mm-hmm. And then the ones that really can tear the party out and they're dope are getting low numbers, you know, to get paid. You know? Yeah. So, that's the only flaw that I don't like about it. But other than that, it's one of the best tools.
Oh, the only flaw is like, you know, everybody think they could DJ.
Yeah, everybody think they could DJ because they got a laptop. I mean, anybody could put the hottest records in their computer. Mm-hmm. But how do you set the party up? Can you rock a crowd?
Yeah.
You know, and not just throw on the hot record. You know, we still like to hear how you set it up. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you could be in a bar or a club and you'd be doing this and another song come on, you go, ooh.
Yeah.
And it'll be a song you know, but just the way they brought it in make you go, wow.
Yeah.
But now it's just dun 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 dun. Yeah. And yeah. Everybody's
like somebody bumping the table.
DJs, DJs, we're sitting there going, oh man, did you hear that transition? We're still hard on everybody like that, you know?
Yeah.
Because DJs here with two ears. You know, I could be talking to you going, yo, man, you see the game last night? That shit was dope. Pick a pick a pick a boom. Yeah, y'all, let's go. Yeah. Hey, man, so what's going
like
on now?
Like multitaskers.
Yeah, we can hear everything. We could be in a conversation just even talking, just hanging at the bar and hear a bad transition and go, and it'd be a dope song and go, yo, what are you doing? And we still want the quality of what a DJ is. So, so. Get tight, people. Get tight on those wheels, man. You know.
What'd you think about this AI generated stuff, man? Like they just taking people's voice and
I'm still not with it. You know, maybe as you know, I'm not as well versed on it. I've seen all the little things they did. So when they tried to do the Drake record, and all of that, and they're talking about even making it be nominated for a Grammy, and you know, just all this stuff.
Wow.
You know, and how it interprets your voice and stuff. I'm still not in that scene. I'm watching it, but not to the degree where I'm like, yeah, let it happen.
I got so many questions I want to ask you, dude.
Go.
Like it's just all over the place, man. But what's the best beat you made in your opinion? I know it's
the most asked question.
I know it's so many.
It's the most asked
like,
question.
When I listen to Reasonable Doubt, and it's what, D-Evils?
D-Evils.
It sounds so polished, man. And then they hear Snoop on there, like how you mix Snoop in there, you use his sample.
That was Jay's idea.
Word?
Yeah, he called me and said, I want to do a song called D-Evils. He said, I'm going to rap the first verse to you, a cappella. Mm-hmm. Did the first verse, he said, I want you to scratch, dear God, I wonder, can you save me? Illuminati with my mind, soul, and my body. Secret society trying to
keep
it.
Oh, see, he already had the song in his head.
He had it all in his head. And I can't die. He said, that's where I want the scratches to go. I said, meet me at D&D. I put it down exactly the way. Now, he didn't know what the beat was going to sound like. But once he described the lyrics and how dark he wanted the music to be,
mm-hmm.
I just put it together. And as soon as he walked in, he's like, that's it.
Is that just how you work with Jay, or is that just how you work in general?
It's either or. I can walk in with a blank canvas and just create a beat thinking. I like creating a beat based on what I think you would sound good on. Guru used to always call me a beat tailor because with Guru, he'll make a list of on our albums and have all the titles already and put in parentheses what the song's about. And I'll just look at the list and just say, you know what, I'll work on the sixth one today. And in no order. And just make the beats match the titles. If it's not that way, I'll just make beats that I think sound good to your voice, your tone, the way you rap, other songs I like that you did. And then from there, we build a song and they write their lyrics and then we come up with a title. And then I'll come up with the scratch hook. So either I'll come up with the hook, mainly obviously I do it, but Jay, Big, and Guru were three people that have always been like, oh, you can scratch this. And not on every song, you know, like not every gangsta song he's like scratch on this or whatever, but mm-hmm. he'll still bring up scratch ideas and it'll work.
Have you ever done something for another artist that Guru was like, man, why ain't you get that one? Like, yeah. Why ain't we do
yep.
that one?
Yep.
So many times. Huh?
And now the only difference is, and everybody that knows about my career know, I don't have the beat already. And then he heard it and it's like, man, you should have given that to me. It was done the same way that I do it with Gangstar. I make it when you show up to the studio and I cook it for you right there. So so none of us know what it's going to sound like until I make the beat. That's it's just crazy. When the finished product is done and he's like, God.
Yeah.
So yeah,
that's one of the things where like, man, I wish I was in the studio that day.
Yeah. But the good thing is, you know, one thing that every time we got back together to do another Gangstar album, our songs were just as solid. You know, I might have a hit with four other artists, and then we dropping Mass Appeal and Cold in the Streets, and so we have another hot album that was selling, and you know, so all of that stuff. We never had nothing that was weaker than stuff I worked with other artists.
Are you trying to get off the hook? You still ain't told me what's one of your best beats.
Man, well, Mass Appeal is definitely one of my favorites.
Boom, boom, boom. Boom, boom.
You know my Steez is just, whew, I love that record. I love that record because it was our first time returning back after 4 years of taking a break.
Mm-hmm.
You hip hop, you take a 4 year break and then come back, you don't know what the vibe's going to be. To come back after 4 years and that's the first thing we dropped and it took off right away. And it still sounded like a good Gangstar record.
Yeah.
It didn't sound like, it's not like the other four albums. Nah, it was actually, it was our first gold because, you know, that one was just action-packed.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Now, I love, you know, my Steez. What else I like a lot?
Did you like Dwick?
Oh, yeah.
Or you just like...
Dwick we did for fun because on the Nicest Move album, Ain't a Damn Thing Changed, Greg wanted to loop the Manifest instrumental and rap over it on a posse cut.
Mm-hmm.
So we did it. I was against it, but at the same, you know, because I didn't want to re-bring back a record that we had already done, but, you know, it's on their album. They put their crew on, and Guru's also on it. I said, okay, so since y'all did a posse cut, we want to do one with y'all on our record.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all it was. And next thing you know, Dwick just became the summertime hit. And it's so crazy. Dub C was there
from West Side Connection?
Yes, West Side Connection. From the Mad Circle, Ice Cube, and West Side Connection, and just being and Low Profile. He's been in so many. He wears so many hats. Shout out to Dub, rest in peace, his brother DJ Crazy Tunes. We've been family, man, since '89, and he was there, and Don Barron from the Masters of Ceremony was there. You know, that was Grand Poobah and them's first group. So, yeah, they were there for Dwick. So, that's history. Yeah. Dub C, you know, khakis and house dying. Shoes.
Yeah.
And watching me make Dwick, you know. So, good times, dope. Man. Real good times.
That's dope. I got a technical question from my guy, Jay Illa, out in Chicago, Jay Illa? Man. He asked me, to ask you, why do you have both of the turntables on one side of the mixer? I don't
anymore, but the reason why, because when I used to go practice at R.P. Cola's dorm room, the desk where you study at, you know, do your homework or whatever, it was only about this wide, so when he tried to put the turntable and the mixer in the middle, the turntable would hang hang too much off the edge. So he would put the mixer here, turn the turntables to, you know, close to the side and push that so it could fit on the desk. So being that that's how he had it set up in his dorm room, that's how I learned.
Wow.
Yeah, if he had it left and right, I'm still not nasty. I cross over when I do all my cutting with the left.
Yeah.
I use a fader and I do this. But a lot of people that see me do it that way can't do the fader both ways because they get confused that the one on the far right, the fader goes to the right. The one on the left that's to the right, you go to the left. So it was confusing where now I could do either or. But that and then I saw a picture of Malcolm McLaren, the world famous Supreme Team. Remember the record Buffalo Gals?
No.
You know, do Buffalo Gals going around the outside?
Oh yeah, that record. Okay.
When that record came out, they had an EP that came out called "Do You Like Scratching?" And they had a GLI mixer in the front and turntables pushed together. And I was like, I don't want to bite that style. Yeah. But since RP teaches me in the dorm room with this way, I'm going to stick to this way. And for years, I toured that way with them both on the right. Now I do left and right just to hop on and get to it, especially if you share the same turntables at a gig. Mm-hmm. You don't want to be like, well, now the music's got to stop because we got to move this over. Yep. And the crowds are sitting there going, yo, man, when y'all going to play some music?
Yeah.
So now I just hop on, plug in, and I'm ready to rock. But yeah, that's why the RP Cola's dorm room, that was Holly Hall, which is torn down now. Now they're apartments for college students. But it was Holly Hall. If you was in Holly Hall,
it was going down.
Hanging out,
huh?
Yeah, it was going down. Yeah, those were good old days.
Hey, man, I want to thank you, man, because you sent me I had the varsity Letterman jacket with
the
collab you did with Amiri.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then it came with like a little miniature turntable
yeah,
with the little miniature album record, yep. I put in the song you did with West Side Gun.
Street, yeah.
Yeah, man, that was dope. That's a dope song. How did you link up with West Side?
Well, we've been working together for a few years. Mm-hmm. Me, the whole Griselda and BSF, Benny and Conway, and and I met Static Selector and actually Alchemist were the ones that were pushing me to give them a chance to be heard, because I was doing live from headquarters on Sirius, and they wanted to come to my show. And so I hadn't heard Benny yet. I hadn't heard Conway. I only heard West Side Gun. I thought he was a kid because, you know,
So hearing that.
Hey, yeah.
I was like, what was he, like a teenager? He said, no, he's a grown dude. He said, he looks nothing like the voice.
Then I see him and he's all,
yeah,
you know, but he's a great, great dude. Their whole crew is just really good dudes. Shout out to Buffalo. And once we met, one day I was in L.A. and I was at Alchemist's house. He goes, yo, I know you heard of West Side Gun. If you're a Conway, he's down with them too. And I was like, nah. And he played me like about five joints. And I was like, wow, he can spit too. All right. And that's how I got into Conway. So I ended up having both of them on my show together. Then from there, I heard Benny last. And, and now look, Benny is like completely catapulted where they're all just really hot on the scene.
Rhyme spitters.
So that trickled down to, I did a few singles with them. I've been on a few of their albums. And then Mike Amiri went to the same high school that Alchemist went to. And so Mike Amiri hit up Alchemist and said, hey, I'm trying to get a premiere to do this limited edition clothing piece, and he saw my batter band perform on Tiny Desk. When he saw me on Tiny Desk, he said, man, the way you remade your songs and played them and extended them, especially Moment of Truth, I want you to do something like that for my Paris release of my fall fashion show.
Dope.
And we'll also launch a premiere line, you know, limited edition. And he said, here are the songs I want. And he's like, I want Big L, Platinum Plus, I want Above the Clouds. You know, he knows his hip-hop. He said, you know, it's bugged out to see people like Mike and Mary and them say, you were the soundtrack to me in high school. Because I never thought that would happen where I'm the old guy that y'all grew up on me.
Yeah.
And, you know, because I grew up on Melly Mel and Curtis Blow and Run DMC and all that stuff. And now these kids are growing up on me. He came to see me. We picked all the songs that he wanted. Started rehearsing with my band. We did the fashion show. Right before the day we got to Paris, he said, yo, you know what? The day he met me, he said, I need a beat that sounds like, almost like it's, you're walking in the ocean and the breeze is blowing, but the models are walking and it's almost like they're walking on a record. And instead of a runway, so that goes straight, it'd be like a record and walk in a circle like on a record.
Yeah.
And y'all would be in the middle of the hole, which is how he tried to actually set us up, where the whole of the record would be the band we playing right there and they walk around us, but they couldn't get the stage to just develop that way, you know, with a short period of time. So he just gave us a stage. But being that was his idea, I played him a track. And he liked it and said that I want that to be the theme of the fashion show mixed in with the other stuff.
That's dope.
Right when we got there, maybe a day before, he says, yo, man, I want to do some behind-the-scenes footage with West Side Gun flanked with models all rubbing on him, and he's like the player, and he's backstage, and he's chilling with all these fly models.
That's just
models.
Like the record store then.
Yeah, right. You got that Latimo.
Latimo.
And so he said, I want him to do a rap to that beat. And I was like, all right, well, how are we going to get it done? We're coming to Paris. He said, I'll get him to do it and send it to you, see if you like it. He sent it. I was like, yeah, we're gonna mess with it. Then Mike said, we're gonna cancel that and do it maybe some other time. Now it's about time to drop the line. Now that we're back after the fall, we're back in New York. And now he's talking about, you know what? I'm gonna put the record on hold, but now my manager, Ian, wanted to put the record out. And he's like, let's do it. Mm-hmm. West Side Gunn added one of his artists, Rome Streets, who had just signed to Griselda, and put him on it, which was not the plan. But since he was on it and his verse was good, now it's both of them on the record. Yeah. And I said, well, we'll put it out ourselves, which we did through our label, TTT. And then once we put it out, I was like, we need to have a video. You know, so I shot a video with two of my camera guys, shout to Poe and Erickson, who actually films the Joe Budden podcast. Mm-hmm. We just shot it in the garage, man, and just got some footage standing outside the Amiri store, and just to have some performance footage. And I was like, yo, we could just wear the jacket, so we help promote when the clothes drop. Mm-hmm. And it just worked out. We sent it to Mike Amiri. He saw it, was like, yo, that's perfect. I'll help work the video with y'all. And everything dropped that following week, and we were off to the races.
So in the spirit of me wearing, you know, the JD shirt,
yeah,
J Dilla, rest in peace. Do you had any cool, like, Dilla stories? Because I know everybody got different stories of seeing him in his basement.
Yeah, just the day that me and D'Angelo were working on Devil's Pie for the Voodoo album, Dilla was there, and I brought Alchemist with me because we were about to go on tour. Alchemist came with me because we were about to go on tour. This is 1998. We're about to go on tour for the Smoking Grooves tour with P.E., Wyclef with Praz and Cannabis, Maya, Black Eyed Peas weren't even heard of yet. Gangstar, we brought Freddie Fox, which is Bumpy Knuckles. We brought Shug, M.O.P., and my man H. Stacks from a group called Forbid. So that's down with our crew. And Busta brought the Flipbowl Squad. Cypress Hill was in, and Alchemist was a roadie for Cypress Hill, because he's part of Soul Assassins. So he's on the tour. So we were already getting ready to go on the road the next day. But the day before, Dilla's in there playing the drums. There's actually footage of Dilla, if you YouTube it, with him playing the drums in Electric Lady. We're in the other room, just hanging out, watching him play. And Questlove was there, because he had just tracked the drums to How Does It Feel? And D'Angelo's trainer was there, and D'Angelo goes, yo, Preem, my first video, I'm gonna be naked in the video. I was like, word? He's like, yeah. I said, the girl's gonna love that. He said, oh yeah. He said, that's when my trainer's here. We getting them abs nice and crispy, because he said, I gotta be like sliced up when I do the video. And even though he said he was doing it, it didn't really register until the video came out. Mm-hmm. And you could be male or female, you know, when that video came on, even if you want to say turn it off, that's too much. You checked it out, you know what I'm saying? And I remember that was the talk of the industry. Every woman was like, yo, D'Angelo. But I was there when Questlove was doing the boom, boom, boom. We were there. We were there, and Dilla was there laying drum stuff down too. Not for that song, but just recording tracks and stuff. So there's a picture of the four of us, shot to Wajid. He's from Detroit. I don't know if you know Wajid, but yeah, he's from Detroit. He took the picture.
Okay.
He's actually making, being that I just moved, he had already made me, Alchemist, D'Angelo, and one for Dilla's family, the actual picture blown up.
Oh, that's
from
dope.
From the actual camera.
That's dope.
Man, when I was moving to my new house, dude, the move, I mean, I had what's the junk company that you just point and it disappears? Junk Lug. Well, I use Junk Luggers. that I said, uh-oh, don't touch these. Because they rolled up in cylinders because YG sent it to me to send one to D'Angelo and one to Alchemist and one for me to frame. Mm-hmm. They took the damn thing and threw it away.
Wow.
I just talked to YG maybe 3 days from the day we're shooting this. And he just told me, yo, I'm getting them made for you now to get you. Because I told him I got to have that, man. But yeah, the picture is a picture of me, Dilla, D'Angelo, and Alchemist together because that was the session.
Mm-hmm.
And YG took that picture. So
that's dope.
I'm glad I have it. I'm glad we still have it because that's a memorable time. And like I said, you know, his trainer, me, Al, Dilla was there. And then there's another picture floating around. Shout to Dragon, which is D'Angelo's engineer. There's another picture floating around with just me, Al, and Dilla. And you see me trying to pass him the blunt. So I'm doing like this, and the smoke's coming out of my mouth. And Dilla's just kind of out to the side. And Alchemist is leaning on the board, just looking. I'll show it to you when we're done. But and even if you need the pictures for this to incorporate, if we speak on it, you could put that picture in there.
Oh, dope, man. Yeah. Dope. Well, since we're speaking of Detroit, how did Prime come about? With Royce. Shout out to Royce, the 5'9", man. Yeah, what up, Nicole?
Prime is a funny story because I got to shout out Kino and I got to shout out Mike Heron because they were working, you know, obviously Slaughterhouse was working. There was some downtime and them finishing their album on schedule. And Mike was like, yo, maybe they could do something that's kind of not mixtape oriented, but sort of where Premier does an EP, maybe 5 songs, and those 5 songs would be from just one sound source. So instead of me digging in the crates, finding records to sample, you would just do this guy that Mike was working with at the time named Adrian Young. And so you only do Adrian Young's records to pull from, but you make it into a Premier style beat. It was supposed to be that. First, I was against it. I didn't want to do it. Kind of put it on hold. Time passed. Things weren't all together like it was originally planned. Royce hits me and says, yo, what if me and you still do that project? Would you do it? Mm-hmm. Now, Royce was just gotten off from being, he was fighting alcoholism. And he had just been sober. And I know the drinking Royce. So I'm so used to Royce drinking early in the day all the way to the night, getting into trouble, doing a whole bunch of stuff. Mm. But when it came to getting in that booth, he's not playing no games.
Yeah.
Shouldn't think like this, but I was in L.A. on business, and I'm getting ready to fly back the next day. The day before, I had just met Joaquin Phoenix, the actor, because mm-hmm. he's a Premier fan. And shout to my man John Abrams, who told me he wants to meet me because he knows I'm in L.A., it was so dope because Joaquin was fanning out like, yo, when you did I Chill, now did you call these people or did you have a list or did you tell them you were going to do this? You know, and I like being able to answer those questions because he really wanted to know how did that a skit like that come together. I was like, oh no, I told them what I wanted to do. And each one, I told him, leave it on my voice machine. And he was like, wow, you know, so we got really cool. And I'll never forget, we're at this hotel, I forget the name of it. He don't like a lot of light, he likes it real dark. We're sitting here and he goes, you see that big curtain right there behind you? I'm like, yeah. He said, there's somebody back there that says they know you. And again, we're in a hotel chilling like in the, yeah, by the bar, and there's a big, big old velvet red curtain, and yeah, I'm still doing this, you know, and because he's like, yeah, this person says they know you. And look, yeah, I just met him.
Right.
So, you know, and I'm still kind of listening to him and doing this because I don't want it to open and they jump out at me or something. Yeah. Do all this. He said, this person that's behind the curtain said that they threw one of the dopest hip hop events every week in New York back in the day. And we don't know if they're just jiving.
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, tell them to come out. Amanda Demme walks out. She was married to Ted Demme, who created Yo MTV Raps.
Mm-hmm.
But he passed away. God bless him. When she comes out, we do the big hug and everything. We were longtime friends. He says, yo, so did she really have a hot hip-hop club? I said, yeah, it was called Car Wash. It was like the spot every Monday. And they're like, wow. She said she was like a big deal. So she was the only thing on Mondays. Everybody in the 90s came to her spot. And she would let people audition to rhyme. You see, you know, it was just a dope place at this club called Quando. Yeah. First time I ever met Busta Rhymes, all of them. Everybody came there. They were the leaders. They were brand new then. Boom. She says, yeah, you know, I do artwork now, and I'm a photographer. I do, like, really weird, bugged out, though. And she started showing me stuff on her phone. I'm like, whoa, that is kind of crazy.
Yeah.
She goes, you should let me do your next project. What are you working on? So me and Royce are doing a project. So I said, I'll get back to you. I go back to my hotel room because we got to pack. We got to leave, like, 6 in the morning to catch our flight back to New York. I'm getting Joaquin and them are like, yo, there's a big party tonight. A Golden Globes after party is going to be popping.
Yeah.
All right, I'll go to the party. Right when I'm getting ready to go to the party and with my crew, Royce hits me and says, yo, I just recorded the first song. I want to see what you think, see if I still got it because he's sober now.
Yeah.
He might rhyme kind of corny. Who knows?
Yeah.
He sent it. I was like, I'll listen to it when I get back to the hotel. And I was like, nah, let me listen to it now. I hit play. Boom, 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 boom. Gather round, gather round. And I was like, ooh, just that.
Yeah.
I was like, woo, he's back. And then he goes, just another day in my reform. Like, he sounded like the way when he used to drink and just be really bargain.
Yeah.
Sober. I was like, yo, Royce, you back.
Yeah.
He goes, that one's going to be called Prime. I said, all right, yeah, P-R-I-M-E. He said, no. Can I suggest when the record comes out, I don't want to say Royce the 5'9 DJ Premier. How about we call ourselves a group name? And I said, all right, what do you want to call it? He said, let's call it Prime. I said, all right, I like that. He said, no, but I don't want to spell it P-R-I-M-E. I want to spell it capital P, capital R. The P is for Premier, the R is for Royce, and then the H-Y-M-E is like for rhymes and everything else in hip hop.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, that's cool. So now we're Prime now.
Yeah.
Got it. Now I present that to Amanda and tell her, and she ends up showing us these things where she could crack our faces into little pieces. And at first I was like, nah, that's not no hip hop. And then I was like, damn, it do look kind of ill though.
Yeah.
Look at the Prime cover, she did that. And that's all from meeting Joaquin Phoenix, who's a dope, you know, he's a dope actor anyway. And then to him to say that there's somebody behind the curtain, she ends up doing our cover, and she did Prime 2 cover as well. So I told Royce, we're doing Prime 3 right now. I told him, you know, I'll have to tell you, you know, like, first one was Adrian
Young.
First one was Adrian Young. The second one was Ant-Man Wanda. The third one, I have to tell you off record who's the sound source, but it's a big one.
I appreciate that, man. Well, I'm gonna let you go so you can work on that Prime. I need that Prime 3.
I just came back from Detroit. I was out there for 5 days.
I need that Prime 3. I ain't gonna hold you, man. So I'm gonna let you go and work on that, man. I appreciate you, my guy.
Yes, sir.
I appreciate you coming over to my basement.
Yes, sir.